welcome to Life with the Girlfriends.
Hi, everyone.
Yay, hello.
And I want to call it officially More Life with the Girlfriends.
Exactly.
We're all about the more now.
Exactly. And we are all about the more. And, you know, it's so funny. I have a little bit of an anxiety issue right now for a split second because we have two lovely guests on the day, which I can't wait. We're still gratefully part of the Unwavering Strength series, and we're going to be interviewing two authors that contributed to the book. Our first guest is Evelyn Roberts Brooks. She's a wonderful author, coach, awesome person. And then we also interview at the later on Cami Ritchie, and she brought up an anxiety attack for me just this moment because you said, wow, that number, that sounds like a St. Louis number.
Well,
and I thought,
right.
Did I write that number down wrong? Oh my gosh.
Because you said 618 to the engineer.
And so at that moment I'm like, holy cow, what if I did? And then
that's my old zip code.
I know. And then it's funny because I'm looking at her sheet right now, And I do have two different zip codes written down. So I'm curious.
Wait. I mean my area code.
Zip code. Yeah. Area code.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we're gonna play it by ear later on. Yay.
Okay.
We'll see how that all works out.
Well, happy Sunday to you, Julie.
Thank you. I'm gonna just bring myself back to the present moment.
Yes. Take a deep breath in. And exhale, and
this is More Life with the Girlfriends.
Right.
With Christine Marie and Julie, and I'm Julie.
And I'm Christine Marie, and I'm the mama. Around here, they call me mama.
Yes, they do. And I call you mama for sure.
That's right. You call me other things, but yes, mamazita, mama.
Exactly, yes. I call you, and sometimes I just call you, hey.
Hey, girl.
Can you hear me?
Hey,
girlfriend. Out there, can you hear me?
I always say like this to you, I go, girl, hey, girl, it's been so long.
Okay.
I start breaking into a boy band when I call you.
Girl? Yeah, please. What you doing out there?
Yeah. It's been a while now. I've been thinking about you. Been thinking about all the good times we shared.
And that's right.
And I just break into a boy band.
You know what? It brings laughter to my day, and sometimes I've just been having a hard day.
Yes, right.
And so as we, you know, last several weeks been talking to authors of the Unwavering Strength series, and
tell me a little bit about Unwavering Strength. Unless you want me to tell you.
Well, it's a great movement, and there's a book coming out called Unwavering Strength at the end of September.
September 30th.
And we're really having the privilege of interviewing all these authors who've contributed to this wonderful book. And it's funny, I had a client say, I've been listening to your radio show, and I've loved what I'm hearing. It's like so much strength from these crises, from the trials of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because as I'm doing my background work and reading the book and so forth, I don't feel sad. I feel very uplifted because the one thing we don't talk about it is we don't talk about our grief and our sadness. We're supposed to keep that hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And Evelyn has a really wonderful story. I want to talk about that because she talks about in her story some of the consequences of keeping down that grief. And the one thing none of us can get away from is grief and heartache in our life. It's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're able to embrace it and grow, just last week when we were talking to Dr. Terry, I mean, he says, you know, I wouldn't have asked for it any other way because the growth I've experienced through my trials and tribulations with my family mm-hmm. has been just, you know, immense.
Yes.
And so we can feel the growth coming, and we can, mm-hmm. if we choose to step into it that way.
And there may be that time where you're just in the muddle of it.
Yeah.
You know, you've experienced the trials, the tribulations, and you don't see the revelation yet. You know,
no.
You're not experiencing, you know, the other side of it. And, you know, we say to you, just keep holding on.
Yes.
And keep doing the inner work.
Yes.
You know, there's a process to it all.
Well, as a woman who has, you know, got her master's degree in psychotherapy and also a certification in bereavement counseling,
yes.
You know that there is this process that we have to go through.
Yes.
and so forth. So it'll be interesting to talk to Evelyn about that process with her and how when she embraced the process more and embraced that grief, how things changed in her life. And before we get on with Evelyn and the rest of the Unwavering Strength, I just want to say at the end of the show, I want to talk about, Mom, you know me. When I hear things in threes, I pay attention.
You do.
You taught me that well. You said, okay, wait for one more. If it happens, if another sign comes, it's the universe or God really knocking hard on your door, Julie.
Take notice, darling.
Exactly. And what has come to me this last week is that Bible parable about you can't have two masters.
Right.
And it has been showing its head through my life this week about having two masters. And as being a coach, we really focus on progress and the end results. And sometimes we have to take a step back. So I want to talk about that at the end of our show.
Yeah, well, I can't wait.
Great. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to say real quick to everybody, you can feel free to get our book, The Clutterfly Effect.
Of course. I was waiting for that.
Yes. I'm not good. And, well, it's so funny because I'm looking at Evelyn Brooks' all of her wonderful books on Amazon, which we'll share. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, we got one too. Yay.
Yeah, she's prolific.
She's prolific.
But, you know, she's no Stevie King.
Yes. Well, you would see her books and you're like, yeah, she's getting close. she'll be there soon.
That's right. But let's talk about us. Let's talk about The Clutterfly Effect.
We have the
Amazon number one best-selling book. You can get it at Amazon.com, The Clutterfly Effect, Christy, Bree, and Julie. I think you can just go to TheClutterflyEffect.com and order it.
You definitely can.
And I think here on BBSRadio.com, Life of the Girlfriends, you can order it there, too. There's a button. And, you know, we're so generous. If you buy the book, let us know, and we'll send you the audio free.
That's right. Emails at TalkToUs at ChristyMarieAndJulie.com. And just say, hey, I bought your book, and we'll send you the audio book. And guess who narrated it?
Chelsea Handler, because I just saw her today when she did her last show, and she said, you know what, I'm going to do the Clutterfly Effect. No, I'm kidding. It's us.
It would be weird to have someone else's voice do our words.
Yeah.
It really would be.
Yeah. They'd be rolling their eyes.
Yeah, like whatever. Because of the stories are so personal, and you're like, well, I couldn't have anybody else say it. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's, you know, you have some guy go, oh, yes, and my mother. We have such a great relationship. I'm like, oh, no, you don't. Not with my mother, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I encourage people to get the Clutterfly Effect. It's about tweaking your way. You know, not these grandiose steps that a lot of times we miss the mark and then we curse at ourselves and go, I'm such a loser. You have a big L on the No, it's about tweaking your way to transformation. And by decluttering your life, and, you know, you think, oh, yeah, I've got to clean my closet. But it's not just that. It's really about, you know, sometimes we have these negative emotions that clutter our lives that have been cluttering our lives for a while now. Huh?
Yeah.
They tend to be circular. They tend to get like a snowball. You know, sometimes you just have to have a timeout. You know, sometimes you just might have to have a nice cup of tea and a piece of toast. But other times, you know, you've got to take a chill pill, and you got to do a little digging and figure out what it is that you no longer need anymore in your life. Because 9 chances out of 10, that which you no longer need is preventing you from getting the new stuff that is needing to come in that allows you to move forward. So that's what the Clutterfly Effect is all about. And I always delicious when people say, it is exactly what I needed at the right time, because that makes me very happy.
Well, and ending on that, I want to bring on Evelyn Roberts Brooks. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi there.
Great, because as we end talking about our book, The Clutterfly Effect, and I was just reading about your books, and how I love it when people say, I love it when testimonials say on people's books, like, this was the best thing I needed at the time. I love this book.
Hi, Evelyn. This is Christine Marie. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Well, I'm going to first brag about Evelyn real quick. I hope you don't mind, Evelyn.
Right. Okay, I'll just sit here quietly and be modest.
Well, she's a certified dream builder coach. She's a life success consultant, law of attraction practitioner, life mastery consultant. She's basically this master coach. And she, what she also is a prolific writer. And topics from worry, she's done novels, and they're fun novels, too. And also her book, You Were Born to Triumph, Creating a Five-Star Life in Your Quantum Kitchen. I love this idea. We're going to find out more about that. And, I mean, all about, you know, forget your troubles, enjoy your life today. You know, when you look at Evelyn Brooks' website at evelynbrooks.com, it's about, you know, releasing that stress that might be holding you back. It's about money issues. It's about success. I mean, Evelyn, I look at your website, I look at your work, and I'm like, yay, I'm saying, woohoo, this girl is awesome. Awesome.
Oh, and, thank you. Thank you. I really feel like I'm living on my purpose in a way that I didn't know how to when I was younger. I thought my job was to make people happy, and I didn't realize you can't make anybody be anything, but I can show people. And I can help people, and I can help people heal. So I'm really pleased to be here. I love your show.
Thank you so much.
And I just want to say, just right off the bat, what a great way to start start our conversation, which is you can't make anybody be happy, but you can show. And so many times we all forget that we can demonstrate kindness and show happiness, and that's one of our biggest purposes.
Yes.
And if we can master that, that's a pretty darn good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Evelyn, you know, getting back to Unwavering Strength, we've been interviewing authors who've been contributing to the book Unwavering Strength coming out at the end of September. You know, tell me about your journey and why you decided to be a part of the movement of Unwavering Strength.
Well, I was there when Judy O'Byrne first announced it. I was in a special meeting with her, and as soon as she said what she was up to, she was just coming out with the idea in a small group of people, and I said, Judy, I'm on board, because she was talking about the different kind of stories that she wanted to include, and I said, you're missing one from the child's point of view, and I can give you that.
Yeah.
It's not that she wouldn't have come across that when she finished writing out her notes, but this was just a brand new seed of her idea. It was like, you know, maybe a year or more ago. And I said, I have to be part of this, because I felt that, you know, that kind of bubbling up feeling, it's not like in your heart area where you feel more alive and you feel like you're almost moving forward physically. Even if you're sitting down, you lift yourself up a tiny bit and you know something is calling you forth.
Yes.
And just like in the movies, like The Lord of the Rings or the Hero's Journey kind of movies we all love, you can either answer that call to action with a yes, I'm in, or you can say, oh, who's going to want to hear a story from me about that? And it'd be kind of hard to write, and it'd probably be painful to think over those old memories, so no, I'll let someone else. And you shrink. You literally constrict down because you're denying yourself this gift. It's a gift to me to share the story with others, because I was able to also see the power in the story that I had that I could share with people, because it's a difficult thing when you're young and people younger than you are dying. I thought I was going to be next. I really did. I grew up thinking always that I was going to be next.
Well, and if you don't mind, I could talk a little more about your story. It's called The Blueberry Muffin, and it's, of course, well-written. But I love the storyline that you talk about, how here you are, and do you mind if I give the little bit of the premise of the story?
No, don't do it.
Okay.
Do it, because it's so important.
It is. And you're at your brother's funeral, and being that child at, you know, age 9, I think you were.
Right.
And having not just your brother, but having several family members pass away in a short amount of time, and then bringing that grief to an adult, what was that, what made you have that aha moment that you realized, wait a minute, I wasn't allowing myself to grieve, or I wasn't allowing myself to really experience these feelings that I was having?
Well, I think it was really that I realized late in life, I was still just the very thought of my brother would bring tears to my eyes and a feeling in my stomach as if it had just happened. And I thought, that's just not right. And I wouldn't allow myself to think or talk about him. I kept pictures hidden. When my father died, you know, it's been like 20 years ago, but my sisters were pulling out old family albums. And my daughter, who was younger at the time, she's wanting to see them. I couldn't bear it. I couldn't look at those photos. Mm. Now, that means that the healing didn't take place.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So the more I got into that idea of how can I help people in life and how can I help people reduce their stress and be happier and do all these things, I need to look at myself and see, where am I not applying those lessons to my own life? Because, you know, it's like the old, we always laugh about the old stories of, you know, the shoemaker's children are all barefooted because he's so busy with the customers, didn't take care of his own family. And we often do that ourselves, like in the field of personal development or helping people with grief or helping people, you know, live up to their potential. We can suddenly, you know, it's like we look in the mirror and we say, wait a minute, am I practicing what I preach, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And so I noticed that there was definitely room for me to do some healing work. And I deliberately embarked on that process of getting much more in touch with my feelings and allowing the feelings instead of, you know, just shoving them aside and say, oh, no, that's in the past. I don't have to think about that.
Yeah, and I think you've been very brave to bring this out, because sometimes we don't give recognition to the child, the grief that they went through, you know, our own childhood, and we don't honor it, thinking, well, you know, we grew out of it. We're adults now. It's over, you know. And then,
well, this is Christine Evelyn. When I was, I think, 4 or 5. I could remember going with my mom to my, I guess it would be my great uncle's house, and he wasn't answering the door, and we looked through the window, and he had died in his rocking chair. He was, you know, holding the Bible, and that was my first experience with death, and I, you know, it was kind of scary because I didn't know what it was, but then. Probably just about 3 or 4 months later, I was going out of our house to my next door neighbor. She was my best friend. Her name was Jeannie. It was her birthday party. And so I'm running out of the house with the gift in my hand, going down the steps, and I see an ambulance next door. And they're bringing her out. And she was, you know, 5 or so, and I remember her being all purple because she'd gotten electrocuted. She was making Kool-Aid or something for the party. And so, you know, I had these two experiences, you know, when I was very young, and really didn't know where to put this whole thing of death. And I was sort of like you in the sense that, well, if death can come that easily and randomly, surely it's got its eye on me, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, we have no way of knowing how to frame it.
Right.
Because, you know, when we're kids, especially in our culture, most children's exposure to death is the cartoons where the cartoon character is in an explosion and apparently dead and all blown up to bits, and in the very next scene, there they are again.
Right.
You know, happy and healthy and smiling and laughing, and maybe the, you know, kind of the comedy part of it was that their faces all covered with soot or something from the gun that exploded on them.
Mm-hmm.
But that a child, we try so hard to protect our children, and we're not doing them any favors. Just because our society has changed medically, where we don't have the childhood deaths that we used to, It used to be that you had large families because so many of the children would die of influenza or pneumonia or things that we can today take care of.
True.
And so you were, it's not that it wasn't painful, but it wasn't the huge shock that it is now for people when a child is dying or has passed away or is sick, that the playmates don't know what to make of it because it's rare.
Right.
It's not something that's, well, over there, and that house, and oh, that house, too. It's a rare thing instead. It's like, oh, my gosh. And I remember that was one of the things that I hated the most was that I knew at my brother's funeral that my entire class was allowed out of school to attend this.
Mm.
So they're in the church, and I knew they were all staring at me.
Right.
So in addition to being uncertain how to handle all this and what did it mean and the grieving and everything else, I felt like I was so different from everybody else.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to handle that either. And what also happens that I think is very difficult for children is that the person who has died, it becomes a taboo subject.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what, I think I explained it in the story, as I recall, because I did several drafts of that, wanting to make it fit the right length, because I, as a writer, I'm ready to turn it into a novel, you know, and it's supposed to be a short story. And so, but I remember that my mother was clearing away his toys, and she had so many of them because he was sick for 2 years, from age 2 to 4, and people were always bringing extra toys over, little things to kind of cheer him up, so there were tons of toys. And I'm looking at him, and I'm, you know, as a 9-year-old, I'm admiring some of the things and wanting them for me. I didn't want it all going off to charity or something like that. I wanted to keep something for me.
Yeah.
And yet, and you, it's a natural impulse, but I felt guilty. I thought, what kind of person thinks that? What a horrible person you are. And then when the topic is so sad for everyone that it becomes taboo, we never mentioned my brother's name again, as far as I know, until maybe I finally asked my oldest sister a couple of years ago. I said, could you tell me something I've always wanted to know? It was a brain tumor, but was it cancer? I never knew. We didn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about it. Everybody was so sad, and I found out, yes, it was cancer. But nobody ever, you know, we didn't discuss it. Now, maybe it was going on with the adult conversations after I went to bed. Who knows? But that's the thing, is when you're a child and you're excluded from the conversations because people think they need to protect you, we really do a disservice to our children because then we're not prepared for the life lessons that we need to be able to handle.
Oh,
we don't build up our coping skills.
You're 100% correct there.
Yes.
And I wonder if, you know, the adults are protecting us kids, or are they, or is it too painful to talk about themselves? And
yeah, I think it's probably a combination.
Yeah, they see the grief through the child's eye as well, and that's just too painful in some ways. Like,
right. Yeah. And also, if they've asked you how you're doing and you don't know what to say, so you just shrug and say, yeah, can I go out and play? Because you don't know how to express your grief.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't feel safe with it. You can see that if you bring it up, everybody starts crying again, and you think they're crying because you're such an idiot to bring it up.
Right.
And so all these complex things, and I was thinking also that as parents, we're not really trained to look for the signs of a child feeling guilt or feeling that they're blaming themselves mm-hmm. for what happened, or that they're trying to bargain for the return of this person by being extra good. And we know now, we know enough like to look for, be alarmed if the child's grades suddenly drop, or they suddenly just want to sit in their room and watch TV. And we know enough to learn, you know, to look for those signs. But sometimes there can be more subtle signs of like a change in your appetite, or again, this idea of being extra good or kind of clingy at home, because of the fear of who's going to die next. You know, now what? And I noticed, like, a lot of movies, I'm ready to just reach out and reach out to the screenwriter and say, please don't do this ever again. The child, they'll be trying to explain to the child, well, mommy died. And then the child is very upset. and then said, well, don't you die too? And the parent looks him right in the eye and says, I will never leave you. And I think that is such a mistake.
Yeah.
It's just such a mistake because it builds that idea up. And then what happens if the parent even just gets sick? Mm-hmm. That fear that we're building up in the child with no tools for how to cope with the feelings, it really just doesn't help. Mm-hmm. And yet, from the viewpoint of the parent, it can feel like, oh, good, they're doing okay, they're adjusting, they're back at school, and they're playing, and so they must have gotten over this. And meanwhile, in the child's mind, there could be this whole world of sadness and fear going on. Yeah.
Well, I know what you mean. I mean, hopefully parents nowadays are, a bit more conscious, but, back in the day, when I grew up in the 50s and my parents were totally, I would feel, unconscious about what I was feeling. I can remember, talking about my girlfriend that died, was electrocuted. We went to the funeral parlor, and that was only my second time in a funeral. And I was just, it smelled funny. I was, scared stiff. And I can remember my little girlfriend's father picked me up and put me down into the coffin or casket to kiss her goodbye. And I just remember being like, I wanted to throw up. I was terrified. And I looked around like, isn't anybody going to stop this? I had no, and I mean, it took me a long, long time to, as you can tell, to
come. I know. Well, because you weren't prepared for anything, and then it also, that's a betrayal, to just suddenly and abruptly, and who knows what was going on in his mind. He probably thought, well, she's little. I'll have to pick her up for her to do this. And for some reason, he's assuming that you'll want to kiss her goodbye.
Right.
And it's reminding me of, in Dr. Zhivago, that happened to him. I don't know if you remember the old movie.
Yeah,
it's in, they sometimes play it again, like on the classic movie, and it's in one of the, what is that movie with John Cusack? Must Love Dogs. He loves that movie, and so he watches it all the time. Mm-hmm. But in Dr. Zhivago, as an 8-year-old, his mother had just died, and they forced him to kiss her goodbye. Well, it's not the same experience as kissing a living body. It's not going to be warm. It's not going to be your friend. It's not going to be the experience you knew. So what a shock.
Right.
An adult knows, and an adult can know what to expect. They're not going to expect it to be a warm, living cheek that you're kissing.
Right.
But for the child, that's terribly traumatic.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah. And then the healing, and the thing is, we try and talk ourselves out of it, and we do kind of this emotional bypass where we go, oh, I'm making a big deal over it. I should grow up and stop being a sissy. And so we throw in that self-judgment on top of all the other feelings.
Right.
And yet from the outside can appear to be handling everything okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's just so important. If there's a child or a teenager who's been affected by anything like this, a serious illness, a death in the family, a death of a classmate, don't just take that, yeah, I know, I'm fine, I'm good, can I go out, I'm going to the mall. Don't just take that as being the true state of their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Take time to sit down and talk and listen above all. And just say, when you're ready to talk about it, like if you don't have the conversation that you're hoping for, the door open to it and start introducing that person's name in everyday conversation. And when it comes to a complete halt or when everybody's so uncomfortable, I find that, like when we had relatives dying as my daughter was growing up, like a favorite aunt died, and I would just use it in a very natural way of saying, like, oh, wouldn't Anne have loved this movie? Oh, boy, would she be laughing at that? She'd say,
That's
pass
great.
The popcorn and let's watch it again.
Yeah.
And I try and just keep that person's memory alive in a natural way.
Yeah.
And I think the more we can kind of imagine ourselves in that child's shoes of what could we want that would be of comfort and not just being shoved off into the corner mentally about, oh, good, they're handling fine.
I mean, my parents would go, children should be seen and not heard. So even if you were struggling, just, shut up about it,
Well, because then they didn't, you know, they didn't know how to handle it themselves, their
own
group.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Evelyn, I want to say thank you so, so much for being brave and sharing your childhood story with us and the growth that you've come to as an adult woman. And I love this line in your story when you talk about, I wanted my freedom from my grief, and I was determined to get it.
Mm.
And sometimes it's just that little bit of a knowledge saying, you know what, I want freedom from this, that gets our journey going. And
it's true.
And to all the parents out there listening to Evelyn and her experience with a child and my mom dealing with grief of losing loved ones as children, it's okay to talk about it. So I want to say thank you guys for talking about it today. And you can find out more about Evelyn on her website, evelynbrooks.com. She has a great free gift there, a couple actually.
Yeah.
And lovely. And you can go to her Amazon page and read all of her books. She even has some novels, and they look really awesome because they also are based on like law of attraction and supernatural stuff and kind of fun.
Evelyn, it was just such a delight and such a pleasure to have you on our show, and I hope we get to chat again. And tell me, what was the name of your brother, or what is the name of your brother?
Philip.
All right, we shall remember.
Thank you, Evelyn.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Wasn't that
great?
That was an awesome interview. And
yes,
thank you, Mom, for sharing your stories with Evelyn. I felt blessed to hear you guys talk about this because in so many ways, I didn't lose anybody when I was real young.
Right.
And a teenager is a little different. You've had those. You've experienced it and so forth. But when you're really young, you don't know how to take it, you know, to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to say thank you for both of you guys for sharing that. And I think it's a good time to take a break before we bring on our next guest,
yes,
Tammy Ritchie, and talking more about unwavering strength.
I was a yay-yay girl. I was a yay-yay girl.
Hello. Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends, or More Life with the Girlfriends, with Christine Marie and Julie. And
hello, everyone.
We had our nice little short break there, and we're back with a new interview with our continued support and learning more about Unwavering Strength.
Yes.
The movement, the book that's coming out at the end of September, and really what it's about. Mom, you're going to be in the second book coming out.
Yes.
You have your story,
yes,
almost all written, and it's really about the time when you've had to have unwavering strength to get through something.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times we don't allow ourselves, like, this doesn't affect us as much as we did, you know, or the situation wasn't as bad, and we got through it, it's all okay, and we whitewash everything.
Exactly, and a lot of times, especially nowadays, as a psychotherapist, I hear people say, just move forward, move forward, and you can, but if you're still carrying those hurts and wounds from the past, you know, you're going to move forward with a lot of baggage. You know?
Exactly. And our next interview is with a lovely woman, Tammy Ritchie. Her story is called Courage to Confidence. She's our neighbor from up north. She's a Canadian. And Tammy, are you there?
I am here, ladies. How are you?
We're doing wonderfully.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Now you're a life coach. You have many hats. Yeah, I know that you have a lot of different hats. But right now, I want to talk about your story and the reason why you chose to be part of this wonderful movement, Unwavering Strength. What was that deciding factor for you?
Well, the deciding factor was when I had the opportunity to share my story. I hesitated because it's pretty deep, and I have healed from it. However, it's put you in a vulnerable place to put it out there. However, my need to help other people is stronger than anything. So that's what really moved me to say, you know, if this story, if my story can help empower one person to change their life, to be better, then it's going to be all, it's going to be worth it to share it in Unwavering Strength. And I knew this book, Unwavering Strength, was the perfect fit, the perfect place to share my story.
Definitely. And I liked what you said. You know, you were hesitating, you had hesitation about sharing your story, because it is a story about, you know, I'm going to say young love gone bad. And we're, as women, we're like, we should be strong and we should pick up on all the signs and we should know and not get ourselves in any of these situations. And it does, in some ways, by not wanting to share our stories, we keep ourselves in that situation a little longer than we need to be. And I just want to say thank you for being brave enough to say, okay, this happened to me. You know, I want to, and I want to share my story because I understand how women can get there,
right?
Even though nowadays we're supposed to know better.
Would you mind sharing a little bit of the background of the story?
Yeah, sure. Well, basically, what happened was you're really correct. It was young love. I fell in love and changed my whole life and moved to be with this person. And it, in a nutshell, it turned into be a very abusive relationship with kidnapping and stalking and police, and it was like a soap opera that you would see on TV, not in my life. And coming out of it, getting the help I needed was really, that was a life-changing thing. So I'm actually grateful for the experience I went through. I know it sounds very odd, but to go through that is, and to change and to get better from it is really what has created the person I am today, who I really like and love. So that's why I wanted to share this story, is that deep inside we all have the power, we all have the courage to make things different, to make things better for ourselves. And once you do that, you gain the confidence to just keep going one little step at a time until you achieve and design and create the kind of life that you really are deserving of.
Yeah, and I think, too, with your story, talking about all this crisis, all this drama around this relationship, the stalking, the kidnapping, and mixed in with young love, and then having that intuitive knowing that this is not going to work. And I think in your story you talk about either I'm going to die or I'm going to get divorced or something has to happen because this can't continue on. And, you know, being as an adult now, do you think that everything, of course, works for the good of our lives, but it really does, I would think, make you a better coach and helping other people, because you know that you know how to get through this.
Yeah, I've walked the path. I've been in a lot of different shoes, and so I can have empathy for people and understand what they're going through, what their limiting beliefs are, what their obstacles could be. And it's really, you know, what I want to do is to help people and say, that's okay. They're in the past. Let's just face them. Let's go either through them, over them, around them, and create what is so beautiful ahead of you instead of holding on to the past.
Absolutely. You know, I did notice, too, when I was reading your story, Cammy, I felt akin, because, I mean, I really felt like, I mean, your parents were fairly dysfunctional in the sense that you know you're coming home and you're saying, I need help here, I need you to I need protection or something, and they were other directed. I work with adult children from dysfunctional families, and so I see a lot of what I call adult children profiles, you know, because they grow up not having the courage, not having confidence, and I sort of felt that in your story. Is that not true about the your parents?
Oh, 100%. Now, yeah, I had no idea I was growing up in a dysfunctional family. Both my parents were alcoholics, and I just, my job was always to protect and hide it and
right.
and whatnot. And so when I did come back from my situation, I felt out the waters to see if they could help me, but they were fighting their own demons and so much that really they couldn't, and they didn't want to hear of anybody else's issues because I think they were so absorbed with their own.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, actually, my first step at getting better was going to see someone and do a live-in program, a 12-step program for adult children of alcoholics.
Right.
And that helped me start to break old and damaging toxic patterns, behaviors.
Absolutely. I know when you talk about protecting, and that certainly is true. I know for myself, I was always like hyper-vigilant, always waiting for the other shoe to fall. I imagine you probably had some of that as well.
Yeah. And always thinking that whatever was going on, whatever kind of bad and ugly was going on, somehow I was at fault.
Right.
So, and carrying that throughout your life, and of course, through my abusive marriage, I just kept getting it all the time. Well, you deserve this. You're the one. You know,
it's your fault.
You're at fault. You're to blame. And basically, that kind of came back from my parents. Now, my parents were never abusive to me. I mean, they loved me to the best to their ability.
Mm-hmm.
However, they had done or planted little buttons in me, I guess I could say, that triggered and let me follow somebody else that also had an addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, somehow I knew I was technically the common denominator and I had to fix something. Did I have to fix me? Did I have to fix, you know, my situation? I knew I had to do the work to figure out how I could stop all this chaos around me.
Hmm. Well, and in your story, too, you talk about going for help initially and going to therapy. And it not really turning out the way you wanted it to, or not finding initially the right therapist to really see what's going on, because your partner, your husband, was able to kind of, you know, smooth him a little bit
and make
him look like, wait a minute, I'm not the bad guy here, you know. What confidence was it? Just you just knew intuitively, like, I gotta keep going, I gotta keep searching. This has to be wrong.
Yeah, no, I think intuitively my little inner voice kept saying, keep surviving, keep going forward. I did have, you know, a counselor on my side a little bit who seemed to be supportive of me. However, he couldn't counsel both of us. That's why he directed us to someone else. And you're right, my partner was a huge con artist. It turned out afterwards that he was actually diagnosed with borderline personality and he had psychopathic tendencies. So he was a dangerous person, and that basically comes down to it as the best con artist in the world.
Yes.
But I didn't really know that until I was told, and even when I was told these labels, I didn't know. We didn't have Google, and I was still kind of hiding and running, and I didn't really know. It just sounded horrible. And
mm-hmm.
I was told, get out. Get out, because you are in big danger.
Right.
And the police kept telling me that, at that time, I don't really understand it, but the restraining orders were only for 24 hours, 48 hours, and they kept saying to me that they really couldn't protect me the way they,
wow.
that I needed to be protected.
Right.
And, you know, for a young woman, that's the worst thing you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That the people that you are hoping will be protected can protect you, saying, you know, we really can't do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then
where do I
go.
Turn?
Yes.
You know, and the thing was, where do I turn? So that's when I went into my unwavering or my inner strength,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that the one person I could depend on was myself. And to do that, I had to figure out how to fix me. I knew there was something wrong with me,
mm-hmm.
because I kept attracting all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was starting to open up without even realizing it, to take responsibility of my own actions and my own
right.
situation. It wasn't until I started getting help and did the programs that I realized I wasn't alone. Like, there's a lot of people out there like
yes.
myself. And then from there forth, I was able to actually turn around and help other people, since this kind of big, huge awakening happened for me, and it was a sense of freedom.
Mm. You know, it's funny, though. because when we do grow up in these dysfunctional families, we somehow miss these cues that get us into these kind of, you know, relationships. And maybe it is because we're, I don't know, we're busy protecting or I just don't know. But I've seen it time and again where, you know, I didn't see it coming. How you know? And for probably quote unquote normal people, they would have gone, oh, you know, red flag. But you know, and it helps to like you said, meet other people who have where you don't feel so isolated and alone.
Yeah, it's really important to get the support groups, you know, any kind of support group. And there's a support group for everything right now, mm-hmm. which is wonderful because, you know, when I was doing this, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, when I finally kind of thought my parents had issues between the age of 13 and 18, I would kind of reach out. People would say, oh, how dare you talk about your parents that way? And so I would just be quiet. And mm-hmm. and it wasn't until later that I realized Al-Anon was available and, mm-hmm. you know, other yeah. support groups. And really check into them and you don't feel all alone.
Right.
And the nice thing about these groups is that everybody's at different levels. And so if you come in new and are just starting your journey, you can rely on somebody who's been there for longer on their journey, rely on their strength. And I think, Tammy, that's exactly what you've shared with women today. I mean, this idea that, you know, I was at the bottom. You know, I was at a place of fear and didn't know what to do, and I knew I had to trust myself enough to
yes.
get out.
Yes.
And so if you're in a situation like that and you think you can't do it, you can do it. And I just want to say I'm so grateful for you sharing your story, because sometimes we get into a situation that we just feel we can't get out and we're just going to endure. And maybe by supernatural methods, something will work out. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't usually happen, but sometimes it does, I guess.
But there was something in you, some spark that said, no, I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to find that seed, that spark of courage and confidence to really, you know, make your way out of it and into really helping people today, which is...
Well, I believe everybody has it. I don't think I'm any. I'm not more special than the next person. And sometimes you just need to have someone there to help you be aware of it, dig back some layers, peel back the layers, and realize that it's there. Everybody has it. It's just a matter of finding it. And I, you know, I had to do it on my own, and that was tough. That was the hard way. And now I'm helping people. Just hopefully saving them some time and getting on with a better life faster than it took me.
You bet.
Yeah.
Julie, how can people reach Cammy?
You can go right to her website, changeitcoaching.com. Changeitcoaching.com, and she pops right up there. And her and you know, create your results, design your destiny. I love that.
Mm.
She's got testimonials right there, and you can contact her right on that page as well. And then you definitely, I want everybody to go to unwaveringstrength.com and pre-order the book, Unwavering Strength. Her story is courage to confidence. It's a wonderful story of courage, of course, to confidence.
but a story that a lot of people have gone through.
Yeah, and are still there. And I, you know, Cammy, I just want to say your story to me just represents that it's good to just start, to trust yourself and start the process. You know, start the process of getting out of a situation. And sometimes getting out of a situation feels so overwhelming that we think it's just better to stay where we're at until it's so bad. And I want to say I honor the times that you wanted to get out of the situation faster and no one had let you in some sense. And then you did it. So congratulations. I'm so proud of you. And I'm proud of you for sharing this story, because I know it took courage to do so. So
yeah,
thank you so
and
much.
Also, if there's somebody out there that's just beginning thinking about their journey, they can certainly reach Cammy at, is it Change It?
Coaching.com. Thank you so much, Cammy. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we leave?
I just want to thank you, both so much for allowing myself and Unwavering Strength to share our stories and, you know, reaching out to people. And really, I believe this movement's going to help some people, and that's what it's all about. So thank
you
so much.
I believe that as well.
Really appreciate your time and supporting us and helping.
You're very welcome.
You're very
welcome. We believe in it.
Thank you so much, Cammie. Have a wonderful night.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, Cammie. Bye-bye. Great.
You know, and I should have said this while she's on the line, but, you know, she wants to help people, and she's already helped me. Because what I see her, I'm not in her exact story, but a situation, but there's been times in my life where, you know, the situation you're in is not the right situation for
mm-hmm.
you. And you kind of like, what is that saying, like with a frog in
right.
water?
Right.
You don't jump out yet, and you don't jump out until it's too late. And you're like, oh, man.
Until you can't.
Until you can't.
Right.
And then somehow the situation changes on its own, hopefully, or mama comes in and rescues you, you know, or something like that. And so I know that we all have the courage when we see the signs to take action
yes.
and move forward.
Yes.
And so forth. So I want to say, everybody, we can order the book at unwaveringstrength.com. And I know before, we've got a few minutes, Mom, I'd like to talk really quick about the message that I was reading this week. Do we have time for that?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So anyway, as I was saying earlier, I've been getting a sign that you can't have two masters. And it's been coming up in different areas this whole week. And I'm like, okay, take notice. And what exactly does that mean? And I was thinking as a coach, sometimes we are really there to focus on the end result, focus on progress, focus on success. And even I always, you know, hey, I want you to have a goal that you can have success in. I want
right.
you to feel that,
right.
feel progress. We were listening to Joel Osteen today or yesterday, and he was saying, I want a year from now for you to have an upgrade. Feel that progress. And so, yes, I'm like, as a coach, I want you to feel that. But what happens sometimes is that process or that end goal feels like the most important thing in my life. To the fact that it becomes what I'm master, you know, it's the master of me.
Right.
Not the other way around. And whether you believe in a God or the universe or however, whatever your spirituality is or however you claim it, you know, think this week, like, what really is your master? Because you can't have two masters. And if it's your higher self, you can't have two masters of that either. You can't continually chase the goal, chase the dream, and then take care of yourself sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it feels counterintuitive. And am I willing to open up? And I think this is what my message was, is that I've given myself some pretty strict time frames to achieve some of my bigger goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was getting really holding on with both fists,
right.
you know?
And you were probably realizing that what your goal or your end result became your master,
yes.
whether as opposed to, hey, wait a minute, I'm doing this so it can serve me. A lot of people end up serving money,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And when, like Sir John Templeton, you know, passed away now, but amazing man, and said, no, money should serve you.
Yes.
And so, you know, as we're probably, you know, looking at Labor Day and who are we serving and, you know, where is our time going, to sort of make sure there is that balance there to say, wait a minute, am I serving this goal? Am I serving money? Or is it serving me? And try and find that balance. And ask yourself that question every once in a while. It's good to check in. It's good
yeah.
to see what, you know, what the old reflection in the mirror is doing, right? Right, honey?
Oh, for sure. But I liked what you said there about, is your goal serving you or are you serving the goal?
Right.
And sometimes I can say that it wasn't serving me.
Right.
You know, because really that's, and what am I really looking for at the end? And sometimes I forget that it's not the actual goal. It's the upgrade that I'm experiencing. It's a person I've become
right.
to achieve that goal.
And we want to have joy.
Mm.
You know, we want to have true joy. And we don't want to walk around with our jaws clenched, you know, and our shoulders tight. You know, we deserve to have that rest. You know, so if we have that extra day of rest for Labor Day, let's definitely enjoy it. Find our joy, find our balance, find out that hopefully, you know, money is serving us as opposed to we're serving money or our job or whatever.
Well, it's interesting because both Evelyn and Cammie both have programs. I know Evelyn does about money and stress.
Really?
Yes. And so many times I know where I'm at and where I'm focusing on too is I know that if I'm worrying about something or worrying about others, my goals, my progress, whatever, it really zaps my joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it also takes away, and we can talk more about this later, this idea of my belief, my faith,
yes.
my alignment.
Right.
Because if I'm worrying about it, I'm worrying that it's not happening.
Well, if you're worrying, you're certainly not in alignment. You're certainly, you know, certainly have,
no.
have lost, you know, the blessing of it.
Yes.
Of what you're serving, you know.
And I just want to say right now that you are a blessing to me.
Ah, yay. And likewise, my dear daughter.
I'm always wondering if people are going, oh, God, they're not going here again, are they? Feeling grateful for each other?
They're doing that, like crossing their eyes or whatever.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's what you get when you get us. You get the honest to goodness truth.
Exactly. I like to say, Mom, that you're a mom to all. So,
I am.
And I'll be a daughter to all. So if
That's
you're
right.
out there and you're
That's
like,
right.
Yeah, you can be my mom.
Everybody
I'll be your daughter.
Calls me mom. That's for sure.
Exactly. So please look us up at theclutterflyeffect.com. You can go to ChristineMarieAndJulie.com as well.
And buy our book, get the free audio, let us know.
Exactly.
And talk to us at ChristineMarieAndJulie.com. Hey, do you have any final last words, darling?
Have a great, great Labor Day. Tuesday we pick our fantasy football teams. We're going to kick some butt this year.
And I have a word to say, too.
Yes.
It was great. It was
great. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.
It was great. It was great.